in which do we get a name? I forget. What was the name of the student at the
The name's
beginning?
Felix, but I think it's
Oh,
only
yeah,
used once.
Felix. Yeah. It's also the pose that Felix is then made to assume whenever he's getting assaulted by his teacher. How did you f 'cause like I'll keep it a book from one day to go to another. I wasn't very versed in Christian or Catholic iconography. Like I knew the guy. I knew what his work was. I didn't know like his, various what was the reason? Sorry. What was the reason for choosing Passion of Christ as like the central sort of imagery, like through line for the plot?
That's such a good question. God, I'm going to like really remember everything, but I feel like I want I th I thought that the s kind of scene, setting the scene of him, really of Father Aubrey, like kind of quite literally like weaponizing the Bible to justify and to kind of justify his actions with Felix. I thought that would just be very potent. And just really kind of, I thought it would encapsulate a lot of the mission of the residential school, or like how so many things were kind of quote unquote okayed, not only with residential school, but with a lot of colonization. Like I think, or it's fact that like religion was just so weaponized against indigenous people. Even thinking about like the doctrine of discovery, where in that doctrine it was like, basically the Europeans and the Catholics were granted, were pretty much granted Canada or North America in the eyes of God, because there was no Catholics there at the time, therefore there was no humans there, therefore they could take it as they please, kind of thing. So I think just that being like literally the beginning of the relationship between Indigenous and European people explains, I think, so much about how like the rest of the relationship went. So I think I really wanted to use like such yeah, like I feel like, and again, like the imagery of Jesus on the cross in the Passion of Christ is like kind of one of the most iconic symbols of him.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CGSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
Welcome back, everyone, to Manook Me, and I'm your host, Caitlin Terrell. We're gonna do something quite different these next 2 weeks with Passion of Christ. We're gonna show the first half this week, with, of course, our discussion we just had with Tegan Smallwood, and then next week we're gonna be back with them to continue our conversation and tie the bows, and as well as show the second half of. This story. And as I introduced this last music break for this week, I met once again with the constant push and pull between showcasing the truths of the harsh history that are, I mean, violent and disgusting history that our people had to go through, while also highlighting the goodness of all that we have accomplished and all that we've done and all that we, still have. And, not letting what the man does to us bring us down. And something so potent for me was, and I feel like I've already used that term today. Last year's Juno performance with Tia Wood and Snotty Nose Res Kids, truly, I think I might have watched like 9 times. Cried every time. I showed every single friend, people that did rap, people who didn't, people who loved me, people who liked me. And I was brought to tears every single time. And I feel like, thank God we got here, you know? I mean, there's still the light pressing of the man's thumb and everything that we do, obviously. But in the moments where we are given a space, a stage, a showcase, in a specific term in terms of the Junos last year, it's just a big fuck you to the Colonial Project. And yeah, so I wanted to specifically highlight Tia Wood's track Dirt Roads, because it's about leaving the reserve to then go to the big city, where she then became a singer. And you know, it's a very paralleling experience between Tia Wood and our character Felix, leaving the reserve, leaving home to a different place. Obviously, very stark differences of what came to be for each of these people, but the concept of home and connectivity to home is something that I always want to hark back to on our discussions on this show. And with such an incredible artist and such a lively songwriter and singer and woman in, you know, music right now. And I think we're going to have a lovely time with her. Here's Dirt Roads by Tia Wood.
Take a
I'm privileged to present to you all Passion of Christ, written by Tegan Smallwood, sound design and read for you by your own Caitlin Terrell. Enjoy.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
This episode of Panukmi contains discussions and depictions of residential schools, including sexual, emotional, physical, and spiritual abuse and abduction. Please take care of yourself and your community in Chimiigwech. The knife slid into Father Aubrey's neck, much easier than I'd expected. Blood spilled out of the gash and onto his crisp white collar, turning the shirt quickly to a bright red. I felt like I was hovering outside of my body. I drowned in silence, silence so strong it hurt my ears. His body fell back onto his chair. His dead eyes stared at mine. I watched the blood trickle down Father Aubrey's chest. It was the most beautiful thing I had seen in a long time. The last time I saw any color that bright, it was the autumn leaves in my Kokum's backyard. I lived with her, my brothers, and whichever cousin needed a place to stay. It was a run-down house, duct tape keeping everything from the icebox to the mattresses together. But it was our house. Sure, it was usually messy, but when I slept on the couch, the sun would rise and leak into the living room, which would warm the whole home. My Kokum was always in the kitchen making our favorite food, and the house smelled of sage. I was 13, and I never had my own room. All the boys shared everything on the res. Deodorant, food, even underwear. My cousins, brothers, and I played in the forest down the road from home. We'd built a tire swing on the old oak tree. At the end of the pathway, we gradually stomped into the ground. All day we ran around our yellow and red painted haven, taking turns swinging, laying in the leaf piles, talking about the prettiest girls in our class. The air was rich with mulch. My oldest brother bought a bow and a couple of arrows after a good season on his trap line. The rest of us younger boys carved our own bow to use. We set up targets in the forest and practiced. The older ones told us stories about when their grandpas used to shoot arrows for their dinner. Hiding, being quiet, and listening was ingrained into our DNA as Indian kids. Our parents had spent their childhood in cellars hiding from the agents. Then they spent their adulthood in the shadows, trading their red skin for white cloaks, desperately trying to pass. So, when the day came to hide, be quiet, and listen, I was more than prepared. My brother stopped laughing, his smile replaced with biting down on his lip, furrowing his brow. He hissed for the rest of us to go hide. We darted in different directions, went behind trees, fallen logs, and bushes. I crunched down under a prickly blackberry bush. In the summer, we used to make jam from its sweet gifts.
Then my brother's voice echoed through the forest, the words catching and falling on branches. I hope I misheard him. I didn't move right away, stupidly. My mind convinced my legs he was kidding. He had to have been kidding.
Run! Now! Juggernaut!
I saw flashes of corduroy, ripped jeans, and fleece sweaters. My cousins. Everyone ran as fast as they could towards the house. Everyone but me. My legs were frozen. It was too late. I knew it. I turned my head to bury it in my lap. I saw the tree where my cousins hid cigarettes and magazines under. I could see the top of the treehouse we'd built as kids, now sitting empty. My gaze melted as my mind danced through memories. Stomping towards me. My heart dropped into my stomach and my soul winced. I held my breath in my chest, refusing to release any noise. I shifted my weight slightly. And that's when a crack of a stick shot through the forest. Hands grabbed my navy sweater, lifting me off the forest floor. My feet dragged behind me as the red-jacketed man pulled me out of the forest and towards the gravel road. I tried kicking and wiggling away, but the man was at least 6 feet and 250 pounds. I was 5'5" and maybe 120 pounds. I couldn't win. My body was thrown to the back of a Hudson Hornet, like I meant nothing to the man, like a doll. The door closed with a bang. I finally yelled, screams pouring out of my mouth like water. Snot and tears stained my face. The shiny black car started driving away. My red and yellow haven became only a blur through tinted glass. Shiny, slippery black blood oozed out of Father Aubrey's mouth, running down his neck and mixing with the red on his collar. He mustered up one final cough, more blood coming out. I stood over the lifeless body of the man I feared for months. At that moment, I realized I was, for the first time since I'd been asked to go to his office, free. Free from him. The weeks mushed into months. Every day the world around me growing darker and darker. It started with my braids falling onto the stone floor, swept away into a pile. Then, starved for 3 days after not properly making my bed. I lived each day doing as I was told, knowing submission hurt less than a black eye. By the time 3 months had passed, I'd been kicked in the ribs for speaking in my language, whipped in front of my class, and cornered in the bathroom by an older boy, who, a few weeks prior, tried jumping off the roof. He forced me to watch him pleasure himself. My eyes for the first time glanced away from the limp body sprawled on the floor and onto my own body. I saw the knife still in my hand, red dripping from it. That night at dinner, I had slipped it into my pocket, my eyes darting around the room checking for any staff before shoving it into my pants and pulling my sweater down over top.
And we're going to end right there. Check back next week for the second half, Passion of Christ, written by Tegan Smallwood and read for you by Caitlin Terrell. Thanks again for coming along with us, and see you next week for another Look Me. See ya!
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.
Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.